The news.
Headlines: Iran says it will provide the European Union with its latest conclusion on the talks to revive the 2015 nuclear deal by midnight on Monday. Israeli forces shoot to death a Palestinian man during a raid on his home in the north of Al-Quds. And China carries out new military drills near Taiwan aimed at mounting tensions over U.S. congressional delegation's visit to the island. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. Iran's foreign minister says Tehran will provide the European Union with its final conclusion on the talks aimed at reviving the 2015 nuclear agreement by midnight local time. That is 19:30 GMT.
I think that by 12 o'clock tonight, we will submit our final conclusion on the remaining issues between us in writing to the European Union coordinator.
Hossein Amir Abdullahian said Iran sees no obstacle to a revive deal if its red lines are respected. The top diplomat added that Washington must show flexibility and a realistic approach if it wants to restore the nuclear accord known as the JCPOA. Amir Abdullahian said it would not be the end of the world if the U.S. fails to do so. He warned that Iran has its own plan B if the JCPOA revival talks fail.
They talk about Plan B. We also have our own Plan B, but we believe that in the end, this matter should be resolved with the realistic approach of all parties through negotiations.
The Iranian foreign minister made these comments a week after the EU put forward what it called the final text of the JCPOA revival, following 4 days of indirect talks between the U.S. and Iran in the Austrian capital. The JCPOA was thrown into chaos after the U.S. unilaterally withdrew in 2018 and reimposed sanctions on Iran. Remaining parties to the accord have held several rounds of negotiations to restore the deal since last year. Iran's foreign ministry has reacted to the recent stabbing attack on Salman Rushdie, saying that the anti-Islam writer and his supporters should be blamed for the incident.
We don't see anyone but himself and his supporters worthy of reproach and even condemnation. Salman Rushdie exposed himself to popular anger and rage by insulting Islamic sanctities and crossing red lines of over 1.5 billion Muslims as well as followers of all divine religions.
Spokesman Kanani also categorically denied any link between Iran and the attacker. He said nobody has the right to accuse Iran in this regard. Rushdie, who authored a hugely controversial book against Islam in the 1980s, was stabbed in a public appearance in the U.S. state of New York on Friday. The attacker is in custody and has been formally charged with attempted murder in the second degree. Mohsen Abbas says Salman Rushdie was a tool in the hands of the West to confront Islam.
On an individual level, he'd kind of outlived his usefulness. I guess Rushdie takes the inauspicious honor or denigration of being, the first potential tool of Western neoliberal deep state in that process of its war on Islam, the real Islam which talks about justice and talks about governments which should be just and talks about a system which is, you know, anti-usurious perhaps, anti-corruption, anti-exploitation of the masses.
A Palestinian man has been killed in yet another Israeli operation in the occupied West Bank. Israeli forces shot Mohammed al-Shaham in the head during a raid on his house in the town of Kafr Aqab, north of Al-Quds. The resistance movement Hamas has strongly condemned the aggression, saying that this confirms the extent of terrorism rooted in the regime's occupation policy. It noted, however, that such crimes will further intensify Palestinians' resistance. Meanwhile, people in the town of Qalandia in occupied Al-Quds closed their shops to mourn Shaham's death. Israel has carried out raids on almost a daily basis across the occupied territories over the past months. Our correspondent Mona Kendall has given us more details about the killing of a Palestinian young man near Al-Quds.
This time, Israeli forces and police undercover units raided the town of Kfar Aqab. It's East Al-Quds, one of the East Al-Quds towns, northern Jerusalem, Al-Quds, and in order, as usual, to conduct arrests. This is what the Israelis claim. But according to the family of this young Palestinian, Mohammed al-Shahan, it's an assassination because they raided the house of al-Shahan family, and when family members left their rooms, they were sleeping, of course. It was around 4 or 5 a.m. in the morning. They left their rooms when they were surprised by the Israeli soldiers in their house. They immediately tried to return back to escape or something like this. They were surprised. But immediately, Israeli forces shot in the head Mohammed Shaham directly without doing anything. So the family members and his father specifically is accusing the Israeli forces for assassinating his son. It was not an arrest campaign or an arrest operation because they didn't order him to, let's say, obey the orders or arrest him, or there were clashes between the Palestinians and the Israeli forces.
Several people have been injured in a shooting in the occupied East Al-Quds. The gunman targeted passengers on a bus and in a nearby car. The police have not ruled out the possibility of more than one shooter. In the meantime, Palestinian resistance groups have called the attack a heroic move.
The attack, which occurred just outside one of the gates of the occupied Old City of Al-Quds on early Sunday, left at least 9 Israeli settlers injured, 2 of whom are in serious condition. Reports indicate that at least one person ambushed a bus as it arrived at the western wall in the Old City. Witnesses say that as people were boarding the bus, they heard gunshots, screams, and warnings that this was an attack. The bus driver has told Israeli media that he tried to pull away but was unable to do so. Since then, Israeli troops have been raiding homes in a Palestinian neighborhood, and reports have emerged that several suspects were involved and that some were even arrested. Palestinian resistance groups have described the attack as a natural response to the occupying Israeli regime's daily crimes against the Palestinians, calling it a heroic act. The world, however, has remained silent when atrocities against Palestinians occur, which is on a daily basis. The Palestinian Center for Human Rights reports daily killings, detainments, and other Palestinian violations, which is described as a slow death and genocide against Palestinians. But those killings don't even get reported. This attack took place in the occupied Al-Quds, where Israeli troops have been stationed in large numbers. But doesn't the fact that it took place there mean that Israel is failing to prevent these attacks from occurring?
Well, the first thing to understand in the conflicts that we see developing is that the Israelis, of course, are the responsible party for a lot of the antagonism and the aggression and the attacks that are constantly erupting in Al-Quds, in the Palestinian territories, because they are constantly waging a program of genocide and attempting to remove all ethnic natural inhabitants of the lands and replace them with Israeli settlers. So what the Palestinians and other people do in these areas that are being subjected to forced extermination and relocation is the same thing that any free people would do. If anyone, including myself, was forced to leave my home or evicted or lost loved ones and experienced such a horrific program of expulsion that the Israelis daily practice, of course people would be responding with any kind of militant response that they possibly could.
The shooting comes a week after a ceasefire was agreed between Israel and Palestinian Islamic Jihad in the Gaza Strip. The truce followed 3 days of Israeli airstrikes that killed almost 50 people, including 17 children. The Islamic Jihad was clear about the response, saying that the occupying regime kills Palestinians on a daily basis and must pay the price for its crimes.
Last week, Israel carried out its latest round of aggression against the Palestinian people under the pretext that it was thwarting a terror attack by the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Despite the Israeli atrocity, Palestinians did strike a ceasefire deal with the regime. But the truce is widely believed to be fragile in some sense, as the Palestinians did stop their retaliatory attacks, but Israel has yet to heed their demands. All this, along with the long list of previous Israeli attacks and atrocities against Palestinians, has led to an atmosphere of tension and frustration in the occupied Al-Quds. While the US and Europe condemn the attack, they are encouraging Ukrainians to resist the Russian war, even calling for armed resistance against Russian forces. This shows the double standard approach they have towards Palestinians. But the latest Israeli attack is only one in a long list of the regime's atrocities against the Palestinians on a daily basis. From the destruction of their homes to false imprisonment and the murder of innocent people, including women and children. All this has led to widespread anger among Palestinians whose rights have been violated, leading them to take action themselves. But the question remains, will attacks similar to the bus incident increase since the Israeli violations against Palestinians will continue?
Well, the only way that the crimes against the Palestinians that the Israelis are perpetuating will end, will stop, is when the Israeli government, the Israeli people, rise up and tell their government, we cannot survive the counterattacks any longer. We cannot endure the pain and the suffering that is being inflicted upon us. So we are demanding that the government be overthrown, replaced with new leadership that will honestly and authentically seek out peaceful negotiations of peaceful coexistence that take into account a lot of the crimes and violations of treaties that have occurred in the past, but that are dedicated to moving forward in a positive, mutually agreeable way. So the Israelis and the Israeli people really are the ones that have to suffer and before they recognize that their own government, their own military are perpetuating the suffering of the Israeli people, because the Palestinians are never going to relent. They're never going to stop fighting for their lives, fighting for their children, and fighting for their homes.
Palestinian resistance movement Hamas condemns the latest deadly strikes by Israel against Syria. Hamas says the strikes come shortly after Israel's other violations in the occupied territories and against the Gaza Strip. The movement says regional nations should stand up to the regime and end such crimes. This comes after the Israeli military hit areas near the Syrian capital Damascus and in Tartus, which lies on the Mediterranean coast. The attack killed 3 people and injured 3 others. Syrian air defenses reportedly intercepted some of the incoming missiles over Tartus. Our correspondent in Damascus, Muhammad Ali, gives us a wider picture on the reaction to Israel's deadly strikes in Tartus.
Almost every time there is an attack, the Syrian Foreign Ministry sends letters to the United Nations Secretary General and Security Council calling on the international body to take action, to condemn such attacks, to shoulder its responsibility in preserving international peace and security. But up till this moment, we've seen no action taken against such attacks by Israel, despite the fact that those attacks do not just undermine Syria's sovereignty, but they kill sometimes civilians, and also they threaten the, of course, and endanger not just civilians in Syria, but by using Lebanese airspace, also they threaten civilian flights over Damascus and Lebanon. Despite all of those issues, there is still international silence over such attacks.
China's defense ministry says an ongoing visit by a group of American lawmakers to Taiwan fully exposes the United States' face as a troublemaker and saboteur of peace. The ministry says Beijing will smash any foreign interference in its domestic affairs. The Chinese embassy in the U.S. also echoed those warnings. It said China opposes any kind of official ties between Washington and Taipei. The mission said the U.S. has spared no effort to stir up confrontation between China and Taiwan. Meanwhile, the Chinese Foreign Ministry said the visit is a blatant violation of the One China principle.
Realizing China's reunification is an unstoppable historical event and an indestructible consensus of the Chinese people, China once again urges the U.S. to abide by the One China principle and the three Sino-U.S. joint communiques, handle Taiwan-related issues prudently and properly, and stop going further down the wrong path of hollowing out and distorting the One China principle so as not to cause further damage to China-U.S. relations and peace and stability in the Taiwan Strait.
A spokesperson added that a small number of U.S. politicians are colluding with Taiwan's separatist forces. He said they are unaware of their limits and their efforts are doomed to failure. The bipartisan U.S. congressional delegation met with the Taiwanese president on Monday. The trip comes just days after a controversial visit by U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to Taipei. That triggered an angry reaction from China. Beijing imposed sanctions on Pelosi and launched its biggest ever military drills around Taiwan. China claims the island as its own territory. It launched fresh military drills near Taiwan on Monday. The military says the exercises are a stern deterrent to the U.S. and its political games undermining regional peace. And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Economic divide.
The Puerto Rico Power Company brought out the anger of Puerto Ricans recently who took to the streets slamming the government for its bad economic policies. But that was just the tip of the iceberg. The economy in that country was not doing well, and that's one of the main reasons why they came out, a result of U.S. execution of things like bond selling, privatization, and malicious Wall Street debt restructurings. Hi, I'm Kabatawe. Welcome to Economic Divide. Some of the headlines coming up in this program: the PR Puerto Rican electric company controversy, rates to have doubled, governor vetoed price increase bill. That angered the citizens of that island. Why did he do that? That's one of the things we'll be looking at. Also, the debt of Puerto Rico. Chronic debt for years. The island is blaming the U.S. government. What role did the U.S. government have to play in this? One of the reasons they blame the U.S., the debt adjustment plan. We'll explain to you what that is. Then another issue that has plagued the island, a subject of much debate, Puerto Rican independence, separation from the U.S. Why? Because it does not have the rights that it deserves under the U.S. and the U.S. Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, Puerto Ricans held demonstrations against the local government for its contract with the power grid operator Luma Energy. Demonstrators were fed up with the frequent power outages and massive price hikes. They say that the government needs to remedy the crisis. Since June 2020, when Luma began operating Puerto Rico's electricity transmission, price rates have increased 5 times. The last rate hike, which took effect at the start of July, pushed rates up by over 17%. Back in 2017, Puerto Rico was devastated by the powerful Hurricane Maria, which completely destroyed the island's power grid. Puerto Rico's electricity was already struggling due to low maintenance and poor collection of power bills. Natural disasters, the coronavirus pandemic, migration, government mismanagement, and brutal U.S. debt restructuring plan, just some of the issues that has plagued Puerto Rico. The economic problems are so deep that many are actually fleeing the island looking for jobs in the U.S. Let's take a look at what people think about some of these economic problems as they have posted online. First up, Puerto Ricans took to the streets of San Juan to fight back against U.S.-imposed privatization of their electricity. Power outages and electricity costs have only increased since Luma Energy took control of the island's electrical grid in 2020. Then Puerto Rican government sitting on $8 billion in cash and uses bankruptcy code to avoid paying $57 million in debt service. The Puerto Rican government and board have hidden real financial conditions of government and litigated against creditors. Unclear that there will ever be market access at reasonable rates. Along the same lines, fees and expenses related to the restructuring of Puerto Rico's debt are forecast to reach $1.6 billion by fiscal year 2026, cementing the island's status as the most expensive municipal bankruptcy in U.S. history. Next up, lots of lawyers, CPAs, bankers, finance guys are getting filthy rich. By the way, those were the same people who facilitated the debt binge that bankrupted us or Puerto Rico. All right, joining us to give an idea about the status of Puerto Rico's economy, we have Edwin Irizarry Mora. He's a professor of economics at the University of Puerto Rico joining us. Edwin Irizarry Mora, welcome. Protesters in Puerto Rico are protesting against the rise in electricity prices by Luma Energy. 7 consecutive price rises. It's affecting their lives. And they are complaining about that and, of course, the state of the economy. What is this price rise a result of? A poor governance, do you think?
Well, the issue of electric power production and distribution has been under public discussion for decades. Luma enters in the scenario as a Puerto Rican, as a corporation, I mean, that has been hired to privatize the electric power service. Its presence means that the price is now determined by a private monopoly, and hence the 120% increase in the cost of electricity over the past year, with the justification that the cost of the kilowatt hour generation is high. That's because the monopoly has been established. Of course, it is high to the extent that electricity is generated with imported fossil fuels, it will continue to be high. On the other hand, from a technical point of view, the presence of a private company does not mean that renewable sources of energy will be adopted. Luma will continue to produce electricity with the same methods whose vulnerability is accentuated when natural disasters, especially hurricanes, occur. All of the above leads us to conclude that there is a serious governance problem in this issue, and that unfortunately the country's government does not listen to the advice of experts on the subject, because the country's colonial situation imposes on whom fuel is purchased and how electricity is going to be generated. That is why the population has taken to the streets to protest, and with more than justified reasons.
All right, let's bring in Isaac Biggio, see what he thinks. He is a historian and international analyst who joins us. Isaac Biggio, welcome. Protesters are demanding the governor to resign because of this veto that he exercised, preventing further increases in the price of electricity. The bill was proposed to eliminate 75% of the debt also that was held by the Puerto Rican company. Why is it said that the public debt is a product of Puerto Rico's colonial relationship with the U.S.?
Yes, because in Puerto Rico, they are not interested in the situation of the 3 million people that live there, but rather in the interest of the big USA companies. That is why they are increasing the prices of the electricity, despite that Puerto Rico suffered a big hurricane, the pandemic. They increase the prices of the electricity, and they don't want to go back to a public owner electricity. So they prefer to privatize the company and to privatize many services, because that's the policy of the USA, which are not interested in protecting their own population.
It's time now for our InfoNews section of the program, where we take a look at news from around the world with economic flavor to it. Our first news item is on a part of the world that experienced quite a bit of tensions and is still ongoing, a result of the fallout of the U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's trip to Chinese Taipei. And it concerns the Taiwan chip industry. Now, why China is not sanctioning Taiwan's key chip industry? Beijing is relying on self-ruled islands as semiconductors, because that will keep its economy on track. Now, we know that China did not like the fact that Nancy Pelosi visited that island. Military operations to the extreme is what they executed. And they also, Chinese authorities, suspended imports of Taiwanese citrus fruits and fish and exports of sand. And that could be just the beginning. So we have to wait and see how that goes. Next up, a topic that we have tackled quite a bit, and that is about the global recession that's really in place. Investors are dumping Chinese stocks. This is one factor that is leading to a global recession, or indications of it. They're also dumping bonds amid global recession fears. The trade group that reported this is pointing to the sixth consecutive month of foreign outflows from China's bond market. The bond market is valued at roughly $20 trillion. That's right, $20 trillion. Next up, what's called a G20 revolt, maybe with a question mark, but it's something that has actually started. G20 states are revolting against U.S. pressure. Half of the G20 nations have not supported the sanctions when it comes to Russia. That's right. It went on to say that the U.S.-led drive to isolate Russia through sanctions has not succeeded, as half the countries in the group of 20 leading global economies are refusing to sign on to that. We have to wait and see how that pans out. And our final pick is on the UK. Again, we've had the UK quite a bit. This concerns the UK energy bills in that country. Well, Brits are not having it. 75,000 of them have vowed to stop paying their energy bills because they're so high. They're going to be tripled in a very short time. The UK government has slammed the Don't Pay campaign, and it has described it as being highly irresponsible. That economy in the UK, obviously one of the aspects, is showing signs of destruction, especially when it comes to people's lives.
You're listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
Hello and welcome to our in-depth section. The state of Puerto Rico's economy, well, it's in shambles with so much debt. How can this island hope to get back on its feet? It is still suffering from hurricanes like Hurricane Maria, which left the island's infrastructure in ruins. First, let's start out with a comparison of Puerto Rico's electric bills compared to the U.S. That's a good place to see how much more Puerto Ricans are actually paying for it. We have picked three categories that electricity is used in. Namely, the categories would be commercial, industrial, and residential. The one in red being what Puerto Ricans pay. The one in the orange is what the U.S. pays. And as you can see, based on this graph, the question comes, how can businesses survive on this kind of energy costs, which cuts into their bottom line so severely, never mind how Puerto Ricans can afford an electric bill that's so high. Again, commercial, industrial, residential, all three categories, you can see that Puerto Ricans are paying so much more, maybe double or more than double in the commercial sector. Residential, not that bad. Industrial, still how much more Puerto Ricans are paying. Okay, let's move on to another graph. This one is very important. This graph shows the GDP performance of the island in terms of how its economy is doing. And Puerto Rico's GDP, well, starting from the year 2012, it did have a slight move in the positive direction, but from 2013, 14, 15, 16, all the way through 18, and then you had a slight bump in 19, and then 2020 back, you've had GDP contractions in which the year 2018 came down to more than negative 4%. So you can see that this economy in Puerto Rico has not been doing well, and consecutive contractions have occurred. Bright spot, the year 2021, there was a bit of a bump. That's a promising sign, which it had a positive GDP growth. All right, let's move on to another challenge that the island is facing. This one is huge. It's massive debt and the obligations that it has. Looking at this particular graph over here, these are the top categories of which there would needs to have been a restructuring. And what we can see are public pensions, general obligation bonds, and sales tax supported bonds. A grand total of $129 billion of debt restructuring that was required in total. Then you can see the figures over here where the restructuring actually needed to take place. This figure adds up to $86 billion, which was proposed for the debt restructuring. That proposal has actually gone into action. And, of course, you can imagine how hard that is when the island is actually not generating the revenues needed to pay back this debt. So this kind of puts into picture the amount of money in debt it accrued and the restructuring that has taken place. All right, next up, another few indicators of why Puerto Rico's economy just doesn't pick up. This one, we zoomed in on the population growth. Puerto Rican population growth on the mainland declines on island, meaning that the ones who live in Puerto Rico actually end up going to the U.S. And you can see the ones this graph showing how that population is migrating into the U.S. That's another crisis that Puerto Rico is dealing with. When you have people leaving the islands and migrating there, then there's a decline on the island, which means there's a decrease in terms of economic activity. Next up, we're going to take a look at some of the reasons why people are leaving the island. These are pretty typical of actually any country, to be honest. Job-related category is number one at 42%, household and family at 38%, the retired at 7%. These are the main reasons why Puerto Ricans, and the last one is just miscellaneous, the main reasons why Puerto Ricans are actually leaving the island. And as if all these factors were not enough, there is a population decline as a whole for the island. And that decline is not something that actually just occurred. We're looking all the way from the year 2000, 3.8 million Puerto Ricans, and then the gradual decline. It's been steadily declining all the way through to where we are, which is the year 2022, and the projections are through the year 2050. God, all the way through the year 2050. Imagine that, if that were to transpire. All right, let me introduce our guests who are going to rejoin us. Edwin Irizarry-Mora, professor of economics at the University of Puerto Rico, rejoins us to maybe give us some idea of how bad Puerto Rico's economy is doing. All right, Edwin, welcome back to the program. Taking a look at how the U.S. has required that the island needs to repay its debt. It's called the Mechanism to Pay This Debt. The Debt Adjustment Plan is the name. It proposes cuts to the island's government budget and threatens essential services. Do you think that that is the way to go when it comes to Puerto Rico repaying its debt? Will it work, aside from preventing the economy to grow?
As I said earlier, since 2016, the Fiscal Oversight Board has determined the priorities of expenditures in Puerto Rico's budget. Undoubtedly, the research carried out in recent years confirms the deterioration of the quality of life of Puerto Ricans in fundamental areas of our collective life, such as public health, pre-university and university education, housing, transportation, and others. An economic system that responds politically to the interests of the United States companies, to creditors who lend money to the government, and to Puerto Rican intermediaries who benefit from that situation because they enrich themselves with the colonial relationship.
Indeed. Well, let's find out what Isaac Biggio thinks. He's a historian and international analyst. Isaac Biggio, welcome back. When you take a look at the way that Puerto Rico's debt has been restructured in particular, obviously this was done with the participation of companies, of creditors. Many of them are obviously Wall Street companies, through what is called the Debt Adjustment Plan. Many are saying that this is bankrupting Puerto Rico in a sense, even though the island was bankrupt. Can you explain to us the relationship there and whether this actually prevents the economy in Puerto Rico from advancing in order to repay its debt?
Yes. And the point is that in 1898, there was a war between Spain and the United States. As a consequence of that war, the United States occupies Cuba, Philippines, and Puerto Rico. Cuba became independent. Philippines just celebrated it's on the 4th of July, its independence. It was achieved in 1945. But Puerto Rico is still a kind of colony from the United States. And I don't think that Puerto Rico is going to increase its own conditions unless it breaks with the United States and become another Latin American republic.
Puerto Rico stands in a colonial relationship with the U.S. The U.S. territory has been plagued with recurring debt issues. The island is suffering from an aging population and high costs for social programs. Many of its residents have also left the island because of its debt problem. And access to financial markets is not likely to happen soon because the island needs to get its audited financial statements up to date. Furthermore, the island is struggling with the aftermath of the devastating 2017 hurricane, which left it in tatters. The island has now formally exited bankruptcy, but it came at the expense of tough austerity measures imposed by Washington. The measures made the conditions almost unbearable for ordinary Puerto Ricans. Power grids, railways, healthcare, and other public services were privatized in order to restructure the island's debt crisis.
The debt that Puerto Rico has accumulated is what is dragging down the island's economy. But what led to the island accumulating so much debt? Is there a hidden story there which led to the island recording the largest bankruptcy in U.S. history? Our first cue actually came from an online post, and that is what this post particularly stated. UBS bonds are doing a Ponzi scheme in Puerto Rico. They're taking people's life savings and lying to people, don't buy UBS bonds, the PR government is a Ponzi scheme from U.S. corporations. It goes on to say not to trust UBS bonds, saying that they're Americanized Puerto Rican bonds contributing to the debt. Taking people's life savings, that it is a Ponzi scheme from U.S. corporations. So what was going on with UBS? What was so wrong about the bonds it was selling? despite the downgrade from UBS Puerto Rico's bonds to junk status. As recently as October 2014, UBS Puerto Rico was recommending that some Puerto Rico clients continue to purchase risky UBS closed-end bond funds that held many of the risky Puerto Rico bonds. Here, it is necessary to explain what a junk bond actually is. In finance, junk bonds are bonds that are rated below investment grade, meaning they're believed to be at a higher risk of default. Because of this high risk, they pay higher yields than better quality bonds to make them more attractive to investors. But this doesn't answer the question, why did the investors buy these bonds in the first place? That is because investors in Puerto Rican municipal bonds received favorable tax treatments for years. Bond investors from all 50 states took advantage of this benefit by purchasing Puerto Rican bonds. When a government issues bonds, it is effectively lending money with interest to bondholders. Promoted in large part by this tax advantage, Puerto Rico issued too much bond debt and began relying on borrowed funds from bond issuance to balance its budget. And that is one of the main reasons Puerto Rico's economy tanked when banks like UBS sold these bonds. That does it for this segment of the program. Please let us know what you thought by ending us with your comments. And that is one of the main reasons Puerto Rico's economy tanked when banks like UBS sold these bonds. That does it for this segment of the program.
Puerto Rico's economy has not been doing well for quite some time. Now, we cited since the year 2012. But even before that, jobs were hard to come by, and the island was just not invested in, except for the tourism and the hospitality sector. Well, the island also is suffering from another problem not mentioned that often, and that's drugs and crime. Also, another factor plaguing the island is political status. As U.S. territory, Puerto Rico is neither a state nor an independent country. Maybe that is what is preventing the economy from advancing. That does it for this edition of the program. It was great having you with us. From Mikhail Itahui, it's goodbye for now.
The ocean of dua.
Al-Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam ziyaratan minni wa niyabatan an walidayn.
Why did you leave us to fend for ourselves?
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and in this edition of The Ocean of Dua, we are trying to discuss and talk about the different aspects of Ziyaratu Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, Ziyaratul Ashura. So stay with us.
Bari'tu ila Allahi wa ilaykum minhum wa min ashiya'ihim wa atba'ihim wa awliya'ihim ya Aba Abdullah inni silmun liman salamakum.
As you were with us, dear listeners, we were discussing this excerpt of Ziyaratul Ashura. Ya Aba Abdullah, inni silmun liman salamakum, wa harbun liman harabakum, ila yawmil qiyamah.
O Abu Abdullah, I am at peace with he who is at peace with you, and at war with he who is at war with you until the day of resurrection. In this regard, what we started to discuss in the previous episode was the necessity of getting to know the Ahlul Bayt, alayhimus salam, and our traditions are replete with introductions of the Ahlul Bayt. It is unanimously agreed in the science of logic that when the presenter is being discussed, the presenter who introduces a fact must be superior to the presented itself, because it needs to present the fact as it really is. So after proving, after realizing that the Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam are imams, after we know this fact that they are the inheritors of the Prophet's knowledge and have been inspired by Allah, we can say that who is better than themselves in introducing themselves? We have to know them through their knowledge, because no one else has in passing knowledge about them. And it is only at this time that we can claim to be at peace with he who is at peace with them. We have to realize with our hearts where they are, what their positions are, and what they truly ask us to do. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam was asked, after getting to know Allah, which deed is most excellent? And Imam alayhi salam said, مَا مِن شَيْءٍ بَعْدَ الْمَعْرِفَةِ يَعْدِلُ هَذِهِ الصَّلَاةِ وَلَا بَعْدَ الْمَعْرِفَةِ وَالصَّلَاةِ شَيْءٌ يَعْدِلُ الزَّكَاةِ. After getting to know Allah, nothing is equal to daily prayers. After prayer, nothing is equal to paying the poor rate. وَلَا بَعْدَ ذَلِكَ شَيْءٌ يَعْدِلُ الصَّوْمِ. After these things, nothing is equal to observing fasting. وَلَا بَعْدَ ذَلِكَ شَيْءٌ يَعْدِلُ الْحَجِّ. After that, nothing is equal to going to Hajj pilgrimage. وفاتحة ذلك كله معرفتنا وخاتمته معرفتنا. Yet the beginning and end of all this is to get to know us. So it is only this time that when we truly understand who the Ahlul Bayt are, we can claim to be with them. We can try to be with them and stay with their positions until the day of resurrection. إلى يوم القيامة.
When people ask, I'm confused about which school is right or which madhab is right, go to Karbala. Look at Karbala, it clarifies it instantaneously. Anybody says, I'm confused, say, please go to Karbala and tell me what happened, why it happened, and what does it have to do with your religion. You will see it completely exemplifies, it clarifies, it takes all the blurs out instantaneously. SubhanAllah, that's the miracle of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's main foundation of morality is do not allow tyranny, do not allow evil doing, do not allow indecency. Why is Imam like this? Because he knows Allah, he appreciates him, he understands his dimensions. That's why we must love them so much. We must love them so much that don't let anybody else take us away from them. There should be no room in our thoughts. No matter who we admire in this world, no matter how great a person we look at, never move the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt out of the center of the heart. Never. They will know that their Khalifa lied to them because he told them they don't pray. And if they see them praying on the battlefield, their hearts will change. So stop them from praying. Imagine how evil these people were. That's how much lies they had. And you cannot eradicate this lie at the level that we are talking about unless you give your blood for the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
So, dear listeners, if we want to be with the Ahlul Bayt until the day of resurrection, we have to know them. And based on the authentic narrations reported on the authority of the Holy Prophet, the first thing Almighty Allah has created was His light. And based on the fact that the Ahlul Bayt are the manifestations of this light of Holy Prophet, we should admit that the Ahlul Bayt are true lights. They are light in essence. And this light is the light of Allah, which cannot be put out by a puffing of the ignorant ones. يُرِيدُونَ لِيُطْفِئُوا نُورَ اللَّهِ بِأَفْوَاهِهِمْ وَاللَّهُ مُتِمُّ نُورِهِ وَلَوْ كَرِهَ الْكَافِرُونَ. They desire to put out the light of Allah with their mouth, but Allah will perfect His light, though the unbelievers may be averse. And this is the ironic point. We want to stay with the Ahlul Bayt because we are trying to reach salvation, and the Ahlul Bayt are true lights. They are light in essence. This means even if you are really not trying to reach this salvation, if you are not really trying to get on this path, they are the ones that attract you. They are the lights, and you have nowhere else to turn to. You have only this light, so you will turn to them. Only if you are headstrong, only if you are self-conceited, only if you are traitor and the allies of traitor, you will not follow their path. خَلَقَكُمُ اللَّهُ أَنْوَارًا, the Holy Quran says. Allah created you in the form of light. This is what we say in the famous Ziyarah Warith. We say, أَشْهَدُ أَنَّكَ كُنْتَ نُورًا فِي الْأَصْلَابِ الشَّامِخَةِ وَالْأَرْحَامِ الْمُطَهَرَةِ. I testify hereby that you were light in the lofty loins and pure wombs. That is why in the books of Maqtal, which tell us the story of Imam Hussein alayhi salam's martyrdom, we read that when Imam Ali ibn al-Hussein, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, was placing his father's body with the head cut off in the grave, he said, أَبَتَاهْ أَمَّا الدُّنْيَا فَبَعْدَكَ مُظْلِمَةً وَأَمَّا الْآخِرَةُ فَبِنُورِ وَجْهِكَ مُشْرِقٌ. O Father, the world is now in dark after you have died, and the hereafter is now illuminated with your light. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
الذي صنعت من الرمح منبرا ظمآن والزمان بعينيك ممطرا نعم الأمير أنت حسين وقدوتي ساروا إليك قلبي وعقلي ودمعتي يا محيي الكرامة تبكيك كل عين لبيك يا إمامي لبيك يا حسين الروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.